Hi there, and welcome to the Leaky Bucket Podcast. This is the financial performance podcast for entrepreneurs looking to get a better understanding of their numbers, plug the leaks in their business, and then move from surviving to thriving. I'm your host, Ian Morgan, and we're powered by MBS Accountants. Hi guys, so today we've got Nick Byrne with us, who's the founder of GivePanel, and they help nonprofits with online fundraising, specifically via social platforms such as Facebook. Currently, business size is roughly just over 2 million annual recurring revenue, roughly 30 plus people in the team, and they're helping roughly over 400 clients. And Nick's managed to achieve all this in a little over 3 years, where he's completely bootstrapped the business too. So Nick, welcome to the show. For those who don't really understand, I suppose, the elements, do you want to just explain a bit what bootstrapping is, how that makes you guys quite rare, I suppose, within the industry?
Yeah, I think there's, you know, the prevailing wisdom is there's two ways to build a tech startup. Obviously, building a tech product is expensive. You need engineers, you need designers, you need these things. It's not like a services business where you can just start serving people. You have to invest in product. And there's two ways of doing that. One is you raise money from VCs, so you get a lot of money in the door, you raise seed funding. The other is you somehow pull it off without raising any capital. So bootstrap means you literally pull yourself up by your bootstraps. So you're self-funding that or doing it without funding. And so that was the route that I went down. I didn't raise money, which means that, you know, bootstrappers would own all of the equity of their business, whereas if you're raising money from angel investors or VCs, you're having to give away equity in your company when you do that. So that's the difference.
Fantastic, thanks. And what for you made you particularly want to go down the bootstrapping route as opposed to going to VCs, equity funds, and so on?
Yeah, well, I mean, being a non-technical founder, as in I don't write code, I can't build the product, it's quite hard to bootstrap because most bootstrapped tech companies are where the founders are technical. They can write the product, they can do that. They don't have to like pay someone else to do it. So as a non-technical founder, it's quite rare not to go and raise money. I think I just learned enough around business to know that I could pull it off with the situation I was in my life. You know, that I ran a consulting company for years, so I'd built up some reoccurring revenue with that consulting business that allowed me to hire the engineer that I needed to build the product to start with. And raising money, like for a founder, like you can spend a lot of time just raising money. And I'd prefer, I'm passionate about the product and the customers. So I just like, my natural thing is to just go build something and then learn rather than spend my time fundraising. And, you know, in the UK, fundraising is not as easy as it is in the US. And, you know, when we're starting GivePanel, there was nothing wrong with the fundraising market or anything like there is today. Like if you tried to fundraise today, you'd have a real problem. But yeah, it suited me just to kind of like build this thing, not really have to go and raise money from VCs and just, you know, have more of a, I guess when I started, I was thinking it was more of a lifestyle business than it was a kind of, you know, unicorn. And really, when investors are putting money in your product, they want it to be a unicorn, right? Like they want it to grow massively. And so you're under pressure from day one to grow this thing. And I didn't really want the pressure. I just wanted more of to begin with a lifestyle business.
Yeah, fantastic. Very interesting. I think that business owners normally are very guilty. We're guilty of putting those pressures on ourselves in a way. So then to have somebody who's outside and wants some return based off that, yeah, it's very easy then to build your pressure up to even more so. And probably links back around to, you know, the whole point of the show, to be fair, about having a leaky bucket. And when there's those pressures on to grow, to give somebody a return, is that when we are taking our eye off the ball that little bit and not spotting those leaks that we've got within the business, which could undo that long-term growth.
Yeah.
So, Nick, in order to give people a context in terms of what got you here, do you want to give us a bit of a history, you know, your sort of working history, early businesses, that side of things?
Yeah, so I grew up in a very kind of, have an entrepreneurial father and grew up in very, you know, I was the kid selling stuff on the street, you know, outside my house kind of kid. So the entrepreneurs is like a big thing now. But, you know, when I was growing up, there was less of a kind of thing that people wanted to be. Got into online marketing like in the late 90s. And, you know, at the time, you know, very few companies even had a website. So I was kind of just putting companies online and just getting their websites up and running, and learned a lot about online marketing from kind of the early days. Went through a stint where in the music industry, where I created a social network for musicians. This was before we called them social networks. So this is like pre-Facebook. This is 2001, 2002, kind of in the rubble of the dot-com bubble. And yeah, built that. We had like 250,000 like users organically in the UK, which back then, pre like Facebook, there wasn't a way to reach people so easily. So that was actually pretty good. And actually, one of my hindsights is I should have just built that business and carried on. If I'd carried on that business today, I would be sitting sweet. But I ended up getting very emotionally attached to that business, to be honest, not really knowing how to move it forward because I didn't know what the heck I was doing. And and then eventually getting spat out of the music industry and going into nonprofits. And that's kind of how I got into the nonprofit stuff, but always building tools. I'm someone that loves building stuff. And so I've just always built specifically software. So I've always built software tools wherever I found myself, dabbled in WordPress plugins for a while, had a business there that did pretty well. And just, yeah, I've just always built stuff. So GivePanel, I think in some ways is just my latest creation, if that makes sense. But it's definitely the most successful so far.
Fantastic. So with this being sort of the Leaky Bucket podcast, was there anything in those early stages that were challenges that you had to overcome that actually meant that you could bootstrap GivePanel and you could accelerate it fairly quickly?
Yeah, I mean, I think like I just honestly, when I first started out, I was so young, I didn't know anything. So, and we didn't have like the stuff we have on YouTube right now. You know, right now it's amazing, the books, the stuff, the YouTube that I didn't have back then. And so I think, you know, just one leverage point that everyone's got right now is there's just so much more information on how to do this stuff. And I didn't really know, like, what I've learned along the line is like about really the steps in which you need to do to launch a product and a business. And that idea that like nothing matters to start with. The first stage is finding product market fit and really understanding that and dialing that in. And when you've got product market fit, then accelerating, then doing that. And I see, you know, it's about getting to that product market fit as quickly and as cheaply as you possibly can. And not kind of accelerating those businesses until you find that product market fit. And I think that's the big thing that I learned that I took into GivePanel and was able to kind of almost build the market around the product before I built the product. And so that's kind of one thing I learned, is that you can actually build your customer base before you even build a product by like creating a community around it and things like that. So by the time we launched GivePanel, like we already had a queue of customers at the door, because that's what I'd kind of learned from those previous businesses, I guess. But yeah, so I think it's that like finding that product market fit and validating the ideas. It's amazing how many people spend time and money building a product before they've even validated that they've got product market fit. And I think that's the big thing, that's the biggest thing that you need, like that people need to do. And and then build from there. And people assume they have product market fit when they don't.
Yeah, to be fair, recorded a recent episode actually, which was all about like, if you can't make your business idea work on paper, then how do you expect that actually it's going to work in reality? Because, yeah, all this stuff you talk about, actually, you know, the market fit, actually, like, can you actually turn it into a product? Can you actually monetize that as well? Yeah, if you can't make all of that work and you can't plan it all out, yeah, why are you running forward and trying to actually turn that into a business? That's a dangerous game that could end up losing money, not making money, and also causing a serious amount of stress as well at that same point. Nick, knowing you, I know you're a very sort of charitable and philanthropic person. Is that what led sort of the inception of GivePanel and that side of things?
Yeah, I can see how you would knowing some of my numbers more than most people, you know, especially on the, you know, you on the personal side as well as the business side, you're probably one of the only people that know like anything to do with my charitable giving. I don't talk about it at all. But that didn't get me into the nonprofit sector at all. I fell into the nonprofit sector after being really spat out by the music industry, and it was just a job at a time when I was in debt and I needed the money. And I found myself in the sector. And again, just being completely honest, there's a lot about entrepreneurs and passion and how you have to have passion. That's what sees you through the dark times, the low times, is like being passionate about something. And I'm a believer that you can be passionate about your subject. Like, so in my case, nonprofit fundraising, I could be passionate about nonprofit fundraising, or you can be passionate actually about building the business and the product itself, and be passionate just about business and about how you build tech startups and things. And just being completely frank, it's weird, but my passion is about building technology and building technology companies. It's not actually about nonprofit fundraising. So any charitable giving I do is very private. It's something to do with my faith. It's actually nothing to do with the how I got into GivePanel. It's which might seem weird, but they're not connected.
No, okay, no, it's very, very useful. And did it push it the other way, that falling out of the music industry and going into nonprofits? Did that open your eyes more to charitable giving, or were you already?
Oh, definitely, I knew nothing about that that side of it. I think the big thing for me around charitable giving was just my faith. Having a change, my whole world changed when I became a Christian, and so that really led to the charitable giving. Is like, I want to, you know, my purpose on life is to help others, essentially. That's a very, obviously I'm using like any revenue I generate from the business, my personal revenue, in that way. But the business itself, exists. I didn't know anything about nonprofit fundraising before I got into that sector, but I loved that sector. It was just a really good fit for my personality. People are lovely. They're trying to sort of solve some of the hardest and biggest problems in the world, like homelessness, refugees, cancer. You know, these are big, big problems that the world needs to solve. And it's such an underfunded sector with so much potential that I fell in love with the kind of just like, yeah, the people, the everything like that. Even though I'm not kind of, I wouldn't say I'm like the best fundraiser in the world, and I'm not like, I haven't written books about fundraising, right? There's plenty of people who are better than me at fundraising. I did find myself very happy within that sector, and so stayed. Even though I never planned to go into that sector, I just fell into it. I did stay because I really loved some of my first jobs in nonprofits. I really loved, and it was just fun. I think they were probably not doing online marketing in a fantastic way, and so I had a lot of value to add, right?
Yeah, there's two things that you dropped in there, Nick, that I want to kind of explore a little bit further. The first of them was about your faith. Now, don't necessarily want to make it but specifically about any particular faith. However, I believe that having that underlying belief that there's the purpose of why you're here and what you're aiming to achieve, how's that helped you in terms of you being a leader? And also you being able to have a good sense of direction, I suppose, in terms of the company, and overcome those challenging moments that you've had.
Yeah, I mean, I think I was I might have been outwardly confident before my faith came into my life, but I was inwardly quite lacking in confidence and would have definite moments of doubt about myself and those kind of things. And my faith has given me just an underlying confidence and underlying, like you say, purpose. And I don't doubt myself, and I don't have imposter syndrome, and I don't have these things. And it's hopefully, it's not arrogance. It's just a sense of like, you know, at my very core, I believe that I'm loved unconditionally. And that means that like, really there's like such a solid, firm foundation there in my life, and that expresses itself in times of challenge with work. It's my wife right now has long COVID. We've been through a really difficult season with the business as well. You know, it's probably been, you know, it's been a season where you know, quite frankly, if I didn't have a firm foundation, I quite, you know, you could understand that someone would crumble under what I've been through. But I felt prepared and okay and got through it, and yeah, a large amount of that is I guess because of my beliefs. So it does make a meaningful difference, but it's very solid and very foundational.
Yeah, no, it's really good, actually. Obviously, reflected on your wife having long COVID and things that I think it's very easy for those people possibly who are running much smaller businesses than what the size of yours is. People can look at that and just think, oh, Nick's got everything great. There's no problems. There's no challenges. I'd love to run a 2 million pound plus revenue business. But actually, that's not the reality. We've all got problems and challenges in our businesses, in our personal lives. And yeah, having that underlying faith that you've got a purpose, you know what your, I suppose it's a support structure behind you, that
yeah,
actually you can battle through those challenges.
The second point
that you raised earlier, Nick, and I think this is something that comes from, I think, a lot of successful people, is in the early stages, there is often an element of an ego or an arrogance that gets business owners starting a business in the first place. Yeah. And we think we're the best. At some point, there's often a shift where we suddenly go, do you know what? Actually, that's not the case. You mentioned and went, you're not the best at fundraising, so you're not going to write a book or do anything like that. For you, when was that moment where you sort of had that breakthrough moment where you just went, you know what, I'm not the best at everything. There are people out there who are better than me, and I just need to go and find them and hire them. And
I get it. I think, so first of all, I would say, like, one of the things that I am is, like, incredibly naive, right? So this is a trait I believe that people that start businesses have, which is can be leveraged into a good thing, which is you're naive, so you don't think through the consequences of your actions. Otherwise, if you really did sit down and consider all the consequences of your actions, you wouldn't start. And so I think there has to be this natural naivety. And also, I do think there was a little bit of it, like, not a little bit, there's ego in it, because you have to believe that somehow you can pull it off. And so if you don't have a little bit of kind of that ego, and I'm not saying that ego is a good thing, but like, and it can get you into trouble for sure. But like, I did, you know, I do recognize that in myself, that I have that ability of kind of like of ego. And then when does that stop? I think at the same time, I also, whilst having those things, also know that I'm a very much a generalist. I would say I'm kind of like maybe average at a lot of things, but I'm not good at one. Like, I've never been great at like one thing. Like, I've always, like, I look at people that, like, I was in the music business, I looked at people that were amazing musicians, I thought, wow, I'm just like, I'm not great at like one thing like that. But I think where one of my strengths is, and I'm okay at a lot of things. Like, I can do spreadsheets and numbers, and I can do marketing, and I can do sales a little bit, and I can, you know, I can manage some development, and I can do quite a lot of things like okay. And so I guess where I was at was, look, I'm gonna basically do everything myself, so I understand it other than coding, and then I'm gonna hire people who are much better than me. And I've never had a problem with the concept that there are people in my company who are way better than me at what they're doing, and way more qualified, and also more paid as well. Like, I'm happy if they get paid more than me. My payment comes from having all the equity anyway. So my sales team should be getting paid more than the CEO if they're incentivized in the right way. And so that's like, I've never had a problem with that. I think, I kind of want to learn from them in some ways. Because I'm the only one in the company who hasn't been hired because they're good at what they do. Like, everyone else has been selected because they have a job description, they've got experience. I have zero experience of any of it, really. And so I'm like, funny enough, even though I'm the CEO, I'm also the one that is like, just never not been hired. I'm the one that hasn't been hired. And so I'm theoretically the worst at my job. And I do feel that I'm totally underqualified to be a CEO. Based on my experience, you would not hire Nick Byrne to be a CEO of GivePanel as a hiring perspective, probably, because I've got to a point now where I've never done this before. So that's an interesting dynamic, but I'm just okay with that, and I think I'm honest with the team about that, and I'm saying, look, it's okay to fail, and we try and have that culture at GivePanel where, like, it's okay to make mistakes. I make mistakes all the time. Let's just be honest about them, own them. Own up to them, clear up quickly, you know, try and not make massive mistakes that take down the company, so make them small and fast and cheap mistakes. So I feel like that's kind of where I am, and I'm okay with, I'm just okay not pretending to be that perfect CEO because I'm not, and just being honest with my team about where I'm at. And I tell them, I'm like, you know, you were hired to be our VP of customer success, and you've got a ton more experience than I have at customer success. And, you know, I'm going to still be overseeing your role, and I've still got ideas and I've still got input. And, but like, we're going to do it together, and you're much better at customer success than I am.
Yeah, I think, like I say, I think that there's that humbleness and humility that comes around after a period of time of being a business owner, where actually then we can almost flip the other way, and it almost feels like maybe imposter syndrome, because you start surrounding yourself with these amazing people, and then you suddenly go, a bit like your self-reflection, where you go, oh yeah, I'm average at spreadsheets. I've seen your spreadsheets, Nate, but you're not average, you're well above average. However,
I'm not one of those people that is like an Excel savant that just knows like all the, like, I can't do pivot tables and stuff. I have to get someone else to do that.
No, but I think it's that bit, I think, where we become that self-reflective, because you start surrounding yourself with amazing people who do amazing things. We then almost end up judging ourselves by those standards. So then almost, yeah, we do become that, or we think we're average at things, where actually we're possibly above average. But I think that comes back to, again, the naivety and ego element we said about that. Yeah, like you said, yes, somebody else wouldn't come and hire you to be a CEO, but actually in terms of GivePanel and where it's going, you are the perfect CEO because of your passion and of how you want to grow that business and you want to achieve what you can achieve. So actually for GivePanel, a better CEO at this stage could not be hired because of what
you just have to know where your weaknesses are. So for example, I'm more of a creative CEO than an operational CEO, so I just have to make sure that, like, you know, we've been very behind, for example, on our financial operations, like our FinOps, like our tech stack around finance, you know, it's got us into trouble not really like understanding some of our metrics and stuff. And so, you know, you just need to understand where your weaknesses are and kind of make sure you build a team around. But I suppose I do have like a level of pride in the team that I've built. So I kind of like, I pat myself on the back and go, wow, you've built a great team. And I think that like one of my strengths is being able to attract and inspire like really great people. And I think I'm quite a good judge of character on the whole. And I've that's one thing I've learned from previous businesses and work, is that it's not worth compromising on average people. They just take too much time. It's like the ones that are below average are really easy to spot, and you let them go, right? Because they're just like so bad. And the great ones are great, but it's the middle bit where you're like, oh, you know, if they handed in their notice, I really wouldn't be that bothered. Well, that's a good sign that that's like someone that really, you know, you should exit from the business, and you should, for their sake as much as your sake, and get on with hiring the right person. And so I believe that perhaps that is where I have a lot of confidence, is that my ability to build it and inspire a team, and kind of, because you have to sell to people as well. Like when they come and work for you, you have to kind of pitch to them. And I think people respond to enthusiasm and a vision for a business. And you can have that. Enthusiasm doesn't cost anything. It's not a great skill, but it's a very valuable asset to have. And I think I have enthusiasm, and that goes a long way.
Yeah. And actually, I think you highlighted there actually a potential leak that can happen within businesses. You know, if you can have all the passion, you can have all the great idea, but actually to really get a business working, you need great people around you who believe in you, believe in the vision, and believe that you're doing the right thing and it can be done. And actually,
it's all that matters, right? It's all that matters, because people forget, what does the word company mean? Like if you look up the dictionary word of company, it's a group of people. Like that's what a company is. It's like, who builds the product? Who looks after the customers? Like, it's just, if you build the right team and you can afford to build the team, and there's obviously a trade-off there, but like if you're going to be more than just a solo consultant and you want to build a business, then it is all about build like the people. You know, and that's the thing that people struggle with. I see people keeping their businesses purposely small because they don't like people. They don't like having to manage people. And I think that's you're always going to have to stay quite small if you don't do that. You're always going to be limited, which is fine if that's what you want to do. Just, you know, it's never going to be a massive company if you can't build a team.
You raised another interesting point, Nick, and you touched upon it earlier. And you'd say you've got this consulting business in the background. Now, I know prior to the launch of GivePanel, you were that consulting business. Yeah, there were freelancers, but ultimately you didn't really hire people. I think I remember rightly, you had one person who was directly hired. How, you're now talking from a position, I suppose, of experience and expertise. You've got a team of 30. Sounds like they're very aligned to a culture and, you know, got clear values and direction. Surely it wasn't plain sailing to go from 1 to 30 in 3 years. What challenges did you face?
I think we're facing the challenges now, right? I think during the high growth period where you're going from like 4 staff to 24 staff in like 12 months or whatever we did, it was like a crazy period. Like everyone's meeting each other for the first time. It's that norming, storming, performing kind of forming, storming, norming framework, right? It's like the early days, all honeymoon period. It's all upside. Everyone's excited. The business is growing. That's the easy time. And, I think one challenge is obviously you're spending a lot of your time on recruitment, onboarding and training. Like, so like, you know, when we've now stopped going through such a crazy time, it's actually interesting to see that actually a lot of people have had their time back because they're not recruiting, onboarding new team members. So that takes a lot of time, but that, you know, from a cultural perspective, it's all easy because everyone's coming in and it's all hunky dory. It's then when you go through the, you know, no business goes up in a straight line. So when you go through those kind of challenging periods, it's like, okay, now how do you look after your staff? Now how do you do it? And I know that for me, I'm not necessarily the fluffiest kind of nurturing kind of personality around the business. I'm more of a, I'm quite hard, quite driven and quite, you know, I'm very productive. And although I don't work really long hours, I get a lot done. And so the, like, people come in to GivePanel and the biggest comment they have is just the pace of change is just so huge from where they've come from to GivePanel. And there's this like 9 month period where you have altitude sickness, GivePanel altitude sickness. But beyond that, I'm kind of like, you know, I'm not necessarily the best person to kind of like nurture those people and find out like how we can improve their work at GivePanel. And so we hired quite early on a head of people, because most companies wait for a lot more people to hire a head of people. But again, my belief about what a company is and how to look after people and my weaknesses in that kind of nurturing ability, like, led us to hire Carol, our head of people, who is just absolutely such a, I can't tell you. She, not only does she make the company better and everything like that, but like the weight she takes off me as a founder and a CEO is just like, I've got someone to talk to about all the HR issues. I've got someone who's basically constantly every day making our people better and happier. And it's like, and she deals with a lot of the kind of like, you know, people will go to her before they go to me because I'm the scary founder CEO person, right? And she's like, she's much more approachable and things. So she's helping us develop a real culture of candor through the business. So she's just amazing. And like, I, you know, that's a massive learning for me. Like, I know you can't hire that person in the first 4 or 5 people. It doesn't make sense. But like, I was quite on time. That's probably the only role I've been on time hiring. I'm really happy that I hired that person earlier than most companies. It's really paying dividends for me personally. It allows me just less stress, I get better well-being because she's in the company, you know?
Yeah. I think your point around people is key. You know, that we've probably all been there and we've had that bad employee, if you like, that actually their skills possibly are really, really high, but in terms of culture fit and it just doesn't work. And it ends up being almost a bit of a plague because it spreads and it gets to other people.
Oh yeah, toxic.
And
yeah, it's toxic. If you've got the wrong culture, it doesn't matter how skillful the person is at the job. It's really difficult though, especially if that's in like a really revenue generating area. That's where it comes like, are you going to live up to your values and are your team going to see that you mean what you say? Because if you put up with that person, like you say, it's toxic throughout the culture because now you don't really believe. And, you know, I'm not saying that our business is perfect, but, you know, we've, you know, it's a constant thing. I'm not saying like it's a constant thing you have to deal with is this person the right person for your business and what are your other staff? They would very quickly realize that, you know, your values are something that you're either talking about or you're walking the walk. You know, you got to try and walk the walk, and that can be, it's easy to do on some things, but yeah, that person that's a very high revenue generating person but creates culture havoc is like, that's a really hard cut to make.
Yeah, to be fair, it's never easy when it comes down to people, is it? You know, like they can make your business, but they can also break it at the same point. And right. Yeah, yeah, it's always one of those biggest challenges. It's good to see that it's working so well within the business though and moving things forward. We've talked a lot, Nick, around sort of challenges and that side of stuff. what about a bit of an opportunity to talk about like some of the successes that GivePanel's having?
Yeah.
I mentioned earlier, helping over 400 clients. What impact is GivePanel having on the nonprofit industry? How much is that improving?
Yeah, so 2021, we raised 223, our customers raised 223 million for their causes. So that's like gone into building new, you know, cancer facilities for teenagers, or new research facilities for cancer, that kind of thing. Funding Ukraine. We've done stuff around Ukraine and helping that situation. So like that's our ultimate kind of North Star, I guess, is gross fundraising value, how we're helping. And we're well north of 500 million now in terms of our customers and how much they've raised through Facebook and Instagram. And so we want to keep measuring that, keep raising that. And that's really kind of that feeds back. And then my job, I guess, is to take those stories of how the organization, our customers have spent that money, and feed that back to the team. Because if you're an engineer writing code, sometimes it's difficult to realize that code you're writing is part of a whole system that then ends up with, like, you know, people who have autism having, you know, a trained dog that like is going to help them, because this small charity, we have a customer called Autism Dogs, and they, you know, they've been able to like double or treble the amount of dogs that they give to people with autism because of their Facebook fundraising. And that's directly related to the code that the engineer is writing. But it's my job to kind of inspire the team and bring those stories back. And so at an away day we had a while back now, I got to do another one. I got customers to send videos in of like how they'd spent the money and give us tours of their facilities and that kind of thing. And that went down as a really big moment for the team. My objective was to make the team cry, and I think I did that. But we do have impact, and I think we perhaps don't even leverage that enough. We need to leverage that impact even more in terms of like our team and hiring and like inspiring our team.
Yeah. I love that in the way they think, Nick, like we've just obviously talked about all it being around all about people and then being living the values and that sort of stuff, but actually as the owner you've still got to demonstrate you live the values and the culture. And it's so easy to get caught up in the day-to-day of building the product, improving the product and that sort of stuff, and then to go, actually, like, your business and you guys who are involved in it, you're all making a difference, a real difference to actual people's lives. And yeah, to have that impact and spread that throughout the team must be, I say, yes, emotional, but massively empowering in terms of like the energy that must come out of that room afterwards of like, yes, we're on the right path and what we're going to do going forward must be incredible.
Yeah, it's definitely like, you know, if you work for a casino or a gambling company, you probably have less of that kind of thing, right? Or I don't want to say that, you know, I don't want to pick or judge anyone. I'm just saying that like we have a unique strength there that I think we probably don't even capitalize on that enough really, because that's really motivating for a team to do that kind of work.
Fantastic. So really, to sort of wrap up, if people want to know more about sort of GivePanel and what you do, it's www.givepanel.com. And they can find out more about you guys there, see what you guys are doing. If anything you want to add, Nick, as any sort of last summary for maybe a key takeaway that people could have in terms of what's your biggest learning maybe throughout business, that actually if you're having your time again, you'd probably go, do you know what? I should make sure I remember that, because that's probably, if I'd kept my eye on this thing, maybe that would have accelerated us forward.
Yeah, it's different because I suppose it depends so much on where people are at. If they're just starting out, or they're just what they want out of life. I think probably just keep going. If I'd kept that original sort of social network that I built, if I just kept going on a lot of my businesses, and there are times very early on in a business where you think, oh, you know, there's nothing here, but you've just got to push through that early part and focus on that product market fit. And basically everything gets easier once you find that product market fit. And don't be cynical about that product market fit. Don't be your own best, you know, It's like those things, like if someone's playing the guitar and they're rubbish at it, their mum's still going to tell them they're good, right? So you can like tell people about your product and write it down and stuff, and they'll people will tell you that your product's good, but you've got to be your own worst critic. And it's not until you know people are going to pay money for it that you know. And so it's just validating that as quickly as possible. Will people pay money for this thing? Get that started and just keep going, and don't give up, but in the early days, just keep changing until you find that product market fit. Because once you find that, that's gold. You've then done the hardest work. I mean, there's still a lot of work to do, but yeah, you're just trying to kind of constantly do that. And if your business is in trouble or not quite functioning properly, you don't feel like you can raise prices, and you don't feel like you're attracting the right customers, go back to that. Go back to, you know, do I have product market fit? Is what I'm offering what the customer wants? And go and talk to your customers and try and do tests that validate that, so that you can move forward in the right direction. Because it could be that you've actually, like, product market fit is not something you get once and then it goes away. It's something you constantly have to work on. So, you know, no point increasing pricing if it, like a lot of people say, which is generally like a good thing to do. I'm just saying, like, no point increasing pricing on a product that doesn't have product market fit. So go back to that kind of study product market fit, become an expert in product market fit, because it's like whenever your business gets in trouble, that's kind of the step you have to go back to. And if you're starting out, it's the only thing that matters.
Yeah, fantastic. Love it, Nick. So, Nick, thank you so much for sharing all your wisdom and joining us today. It's been absolute pleasure. Yeah, thank you
Yeah,
very
it was fun.
much. Cheers.
Cheers.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Leaky Bucket Podcast. I'd love it if you could spread the message by clicking subscribe and leaving a review. And if you want to find out more, you can also fill out our online financial health check scorecard to see where all the holes might be hiding in your bucket. Just head over to mbsaccountants.scoreapp.com. And you can also find the link in the show notes below. See you next time.